In 2006, FAMU alumnus Michael Morton was arrested, expelled from school, and later convicted of hazing and sent to prison. Now he speaks to college students across the country to discuss the impact hazing had on his life and how he went from being a Florida prison inmate to working in corporate America. Lynn Hatter reports.
The last time we heard your name was...
in 2007, probably.
Yeah?
Yeah, when the sentence came down, because that was, I think, you know, the nation was watching. My case was the first case that was, quote unquote, tested under the new hazing law. Florida was one of a few states at that time that had just criminalized hazing. Mm-hmm. And my case was the first case that actually went to trial under this new law. So it was sort of the litmus test of how states and institutions and society was going to deal with the problem.
We criminalized hazing. We made it a felony.
Felony.
And I think you were... Well, we had just criminalized hazing. We made it a felony, and I believe you were one of the first two people to get a conviction.
Absolutely.
Convicted. What? Take us back, just so our listeners know, you and your co-defendant were convicted of felony hazing for what was essentially an initiation ritual.
Yep.
Via the Kappa Alpha Psi fraternity chapter at Florida A&M University. Take us back to that day in court when, you know, you learned of that sentence.
Nothing prepares you for it, right? You don't ever wake up thinking about having that day. I mean, you know, I was a kid who, talking to Gail earlier, I was a kid who, and I grew up in the Caribbean, in paradise, right? Very small island. Humble beginnings, parents didn't go to college, you know, inner city kid, right? And the only idea of sort of my future that I had was just becoming an engineer. Cause I was good in math and science, and people were like, you know, you should, my teachers always told me that that's what you should do. And so I came to FAMU to become an engineer, and I got involved. I was a student leader, was, involved in student government, president of the student body senate, and my entire college career was really focused around becoming successful, right, and getting a great job and making my parents and my family proud. And so, and I had that, right? When I got arrested, it was literally months before graduation. I had a job offer in my hand from Pepsi, working in their engineering leadership development program. And so I saw my future in front of me. I had it laid out. And so fast forward several months later to that day in court when the judge said 2 years in prison, the only thing I thought about was, wow, I lost it. Every single thing that I had worked so hard to achieve was gone. Had been kicked out of school, lost a job offer, no degree, and now I'm a convicted felon. Like, how do you? It was just a swell of emotions, and it was overwhelming, for sure.
You know, I remember. I think, was it your fiance at the time?
Yes.
And your daughter?
She was pregnant.
She was still pregnant, and I remember. I think she just started crying, and I wonder, like, you know, did you have an opportunity to say goodbye to them?
Oh, no.
Did you?
No, not at all. To your it happened so fast, right? You take your freedom for granted. In that moment, it was, you know, I'd been, you know, sort of going through the trial and the legal process. But I never thought that was going to be my outcome. You know, so that Friday morning when I woke up, you know, I'm thinking, okay, great, this is going to end just like the first trial. It's going to be a hung jury or, you know, whatever, somehow that I'll be exonerated and we'll get to pick my life back together again. But when the jury came back with the verdict, that was it. everything that I knew was gone, in that my liberties were taken away. So they put the handcuffs on me, walked me away, and that was the end of my freedom. No chance to say goodbye to my fiance at the time, my friends, my mother. It was devastating.
Where did you go after you walked out of the courtroom?
To the Leon County Jail.
And then after the Leon County Jail?
State prison.
Hmm. Which one?
A couple. And I'm sure that the prison system's probably changed, or maybe not since then, but there's a certain intake process, right? So everyone from the respective municipalities within mm-hmm. the states go to this central state processing facility. And everyone's there, right? All types of offenders, from the low-level folks to the folks that are doing really severe sentences for horrendous crimes. And so I was there for a few months as part of this sort of intake process, and then was transferred to Wakulla Correctional Facility for some time, which was a faith-based camp. And then eventually to Tallahassee Road Prison, and then towards the latter part of my sentence, I was in a work release facility right here in Tallahassee.
What was it like being in prison for you? A person who, you know, you had worked, you had been in college, you had joined a fraternity, you were well respected by your peers, to go from that to incarceration?
It's, you know, like I say, nothing prepares you for it. God, it was scary. You know, the only images of prison that I had was what I saw on, like, Oz and, you know, Shawshank Redemption, right? It was, and I'm thinking, you know, this is the place that I'm going, right? And, you know, it was just utter disbelief, I think. It was fear. You know, I was scared about my own safety, right? I didn't know if I was going to be, you know, if it was, I mean, this clearly wasn't a country club. I mean, I knew where I was going. I was going to prison.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew the kinds of people that would be there. And I didn't think that the reception was going to be all friendly. So I was very afraid, for sure. But I was also, I think, more fearful of the fact that I was a convicted felon, and the fact that this case was so nationally publicized. And I thought about not just the freedom that I had lost, but the loss of, I'd say, my livelihood. And I thought, okay, this is scary for the next 2 years, but somehow I'll get through this. But then when I get out, what am I going to do? Who's going to hire me? I'm a convicted felon. I'm 20-something years old. I don't have a degree. I've, you know, lost everything, my reputation and credibility. And sure enough, some of those things were true. When I came out, it was definitely tough to get them. But you know, those feelings also overcame. I felt those feelings too when I was in prison. Like, there's no hope for me at this point.
How did you get through your prison sentence? And did you learn anything while there?
Yeah. Huh. You got all night?
This thing can run for hours.
Yeah, man. How did I get through? The grace of God, first and foremost. I mean, it's, I don't even know how I got through that. Nothing prepares you for it. Nothing. You know, I wish that I could say that, you know, there's this, you know, there was some experience in my life before this, or, you know, my parents were tough on me. So, you know, going through something tough, just, you know, I was prepared. No, nothing ever prepares you for it, for sure. So I absolutely, I think God's grace and mercy was with me. And I certainly had people on the outside who were supportive of me. Because as I mentioned, you know, when I was a student, I was very involved and very active. I was in student government, you know, in the honor rolls, and I was studying engineering. And at my sentencing hearing, former university president came and spoke, former chairman of FAMU's Board of Trustees, the current chairman at that time of FAMU's Board of Trustees, and all of my professors. Mm-hmm. So I there were a lot of people that were supportive of me while I was in prison. So case in point, right, when I talked about my future and what am I going to do after prison, well, my professor had actually sent me study materials to take the GRE, and I took the GRE when I was in prison.
Wow, really?
I did. And I think I had, there were people on the outside who were, they gave me hope. They encouraged me to not let my situation define me, to not let the circumstances define me. And they offered very, you know, practical ways to help me do that. One of which is, like I said, studying for the GRE. So, it, you know, when I did that and I scored very well, well above the 90th percentile in terms of overall test scores, it gave me some sense that, okay, maybe there's a light at the end of the tunnel. And as the story goes, I eventually went on to go to grad school and went to Rutgers on a full ride scholarship, et cetera.
You did. And eventually your sentence was overturned.
Correct.
Which allowed you to finally get out. So what came about so that once you were released, I mean, here you are months away from graduating with, was it a master's or your undergrad?
Undergrad.
With months away from graduating with a degree to find yourself now university-less and degree-less. Mm-hmm. Now you're out. How did you get back?
Yeah. Yeah, so I think a couple of things happened, right? The fact that the conviction was overturned, I think, created the space for me to do the things necessary to get back everything that I had lost. Ironically, the case was overturned on the exact same day that I was walking out of prison anyway. So I had served my 2 years, but not as a convicted felon, as it turns out, right? So I think it certainly helped a whole lot. The new university president at that time, Dr. James Ammons, there were certainly some stipulations that I needed to go through to get reinstated into school. Went through those stipulations, did everything that the university required, eventually graduated with my degree in engineering. And went on I interned that summer at NASA. And after that internship, you know, through the work and preparation that I was doing in prison, i.e. taking my GRE and preparing for graduate school, I had then applied to Rutgers engineering program. And since then, I think the trajectory of my life had I shifted, mm-hmm. and came back in line with sort of how I left it before everything happened in 2006.
So what are you doing today?
Yeah. So my day job, right? So I work, I'm a supply chain leader with Johnson & Johnson. I support their drug portfolio business, about $9 billion in revenue for North America, both U.S. and Canada. That's the day job. The work that I'm doing now really is sharing my story for the benefit of other young people. you know, when I started college, and this is true for all young people that start college, you know, you don't think about going to prison. Mm-hmm. That's the last thing you want to do, right? The last thing you want to do is throw your life away. College is all about creating your future. It's the time where you get to have your heart's desire, so to speak. And I lost that because I got distracted. I got distracted by the wrong things. And the work that I'm most passionate about now is helping young people stay focused on their future and making the most out of their college experience.
Was it worth it?
Absolutely not.
And here's the second part of it. Do you think you would be the person you are today if you had not gone through what you did?
Yeah, there's a part of me that says, yes, upon reflection of the experience. Look, it has certainly shaped my thinking and my perspective and the things that I now value. Which, you know, when you're 21, 22, you know, you don't think about those things, right? But when life hits you really, really hard at that age and you lose everything, including the missing the birth of your daughter, which, you know, happened for me, right? It put a lot of things into perspective, and that experience has certainly had a positive impact on me because of what I learned from it. Now, I think it's we'll be looking into a crystal ball, you know, if we were, you know, trying to answer the question of would I be the same person today without it. I'm not sure. I don't know, but I know it happened. And because of it, I think it has had a positive impact on me.
You graduated in 2010 or 2009?
2009, eventually, when I got out of
got
prison.
Back.
Yep.
2009. How did you hear about the death of Robert Champion?
And this reminder, what year did this happen?
2011.
This was 2011. So mm-hmm. I was...
You have been out for two years.
I was out for 2 years. 2011, I was just finishing grad school mm-hmm. at that time and just starting my career at Johnson & Johnson. And I think I saw it on the news and was shocked, right? My reaction was... I was shocked that it had not been too long ago that the same thing happened in my case, right? I was just shocked to see hazing was still happening at FAMU, right, where there was so much, it was a national story,
mm-hmm.
right? So I was very, very surprised to see that. Now, I don't know what the universities or the FAMU community, including the university administration, the Greek letter organizations, both the undergrad and national organizations, I don't know what their response was to me going to prison for it. But I assumed that what happened to me would have been the impetus for change. Right, for these types of things not to happen, not taking away anything what they did, because I'm not sure of what that was.
Mm-hmm.
But I said, come on, you got to be kidding me. Like, what else does it take? Right. And I get it, because I was young and misguided, too. I understand that. And but I, you know, when I saw that, I said, gosh, whatever it is that they did, whatever it is the university's response was to me going to prison, and I'm sure there was a lot of dialogue about, okay, how do we change the code? Whatever it was, it just didn't happen. And so I started to think about that. I was like, okay, all right, so this is still a problem. And I think it took me some time, you 4 years later, for me to say, it's time for me to offer a, to be a part of the solution. You know, to offer a perspective to students that I know students don't hear a lot. I was just looking back at, you know, I saw what happened to Robert Champion. I thought back to my own experiences and I said, okay, what was I thinking then, right? What was going through my mind when I decided that this was something that I wanted to do, that I wanted to be hazed and then haze other people? And I think the one big thing that was missing was, you know, you have a lot of older people, like, you know, at that time, my, you know, other 20, 30 something year olds that are in the fraternity that you respect and look up to and admire. And they either A, glorify hazing, right, and perpetuate the tradition, or they sit on a sideline and they don't say anything about it. They speak anonymously. Oh, we don't think it's right. I had a bad experience. But no one really steps up in the light and tell people very directly, mm-hmm. as equally as they hear, yes, you should haze. Yes, this is the good. This is the way to do it. They don't hear the flip side of that, that this thing can destroy your future, which it did for me.
And there's a stigma attached to it. But there's a stigma on the other side. If you don't do it, or if you go through as paper, you're not equal to, you are not as good as,
sure.
you don't really count. So we talk about the stigma now associated with hazing, but there's probably an even larger and a quieter and a more threatening stigma, which is, if you just sign your paper and pay your dues, you're not considered one of us.
Yeah, you don't get the full benefits of membership.
No guts, no glory.
For sure. Absolutely. Yeah, I think that there's a lot of psychological pressures, social and psychological pressures that lead people down that path, right? At the end of the day, you know, some of these things are real primitive motivations. And people just want to belong.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, you know, I don't want to be a Kappa in name only. I want to belong. Right.
So I want to be able to step.
I want to step.
I want to be able to go to the parties.
I want to wear my T-shirt. Right.
With a number on it.
With a number. And I want to be I want to feel glorified. I want to feel important. I want to feel important. I want when, you know, my sorority sisters and frat brothers are talking about, you know, members of the chapter, I want to be included in that, in those, and, you know, the legacy of those individuals that are talked about. I want to be just like my mom.
Or my dad.
Or my dad. Right? Because I can tell you, I had friends who, you know, when I was a freshman and sophomore and thinking about joining a Greek letter organization, they would tell me about some of their inspirations. Now, like I said, my parents didn't go to college, so I didn't really, my motivations were very different. But, you know, they talked about how their parents who had pledged back in the 70s and 80s and 60s and, the, you know, the glory days, so to speak. Right. And they see how they see the relationship that their parent might have with their line brothers or their fraternity brothers. They all show up at their weddings,
mm-hmm.
baby showers. Right. We even have, you know, few specific like rituals when, you know, people pass away. You know, they go on line trips together. So it's a big part of the social safety and identity, particularly for African Americans, right? So a lot of people have their mind made up even before they get to college that, hey, I want to be an AKA just like my great, 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 great grandmother who've been doing this forever, mm-hmm. right? And in their minds, look, that is what I want to belong to.
But they're saying, that mm-hmm. is what I want to belong to. And what they find is something a little bit different.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, and I think what doesn't get talked about is, okay, what do you have to go through to get it? And here's what I think the problem is. I think the problem is that I don't think that our Greek letter organizations do enough to acknowledge that we have a that this is a real cultural problem. So, and I know this because, you know, I was president of my chapter for 2 years and, you know, our chapter had one chapter of the year and all this stuff. And so I get the fraternity's policies and NPHC's policies. And they will tell you, look, we are an anti-hazing organization. But that's not true. We are a hazing organization. Right? On one hand, we say on paper, look, we don't haze. But in practice, we do. And I don't think we do enough to accept that and to courageously tackle some of those problems. I think that there's still a lot of older members who believe in it. You know, mm-hmm. Case in point, right? So you might be aware of this. The Investigative Discovery just did they're doing a series called Daily Devotions, and episode mm-hmm. 3 was that of the two young ladies who were trying to become a Delta at, I think, Eastern Carolina Shore, Eastern Carolina University. I forget the exact name of it. But this happened just a few years ago. And these young women, not only were they hazed, but they were hazed when their chapter advisor was around. Right? Now, we're an anti-hazing organization, but then you've got people in leadership roles and people that have, you know, this sort of social, these are adults mm-hmm. who are saying, yeah, you need to do this. Right? And we don't do enough to say, look, you know, we have a cultural problem that we need to address within the Greek letter organizations. And I think that is, you know, a lot of people when they, you know, they come into that, you know, with this sort of expectation that, like, my parents did it, my family members did it, I want to be a part of that. Oh, and by the way, I'm seeing it perpetuated and glorified by other older members in the fraternity. So, yes, I think this is what I have to do. Even though deep down inside, it's kind of mm-hmm. crazy, but it's worth it. Right? It's
and
worth it.
Everybody starts off thinking it's crazy.
And everybody, and we all do. We all start off thinking it's crazy. But here's the scary part. Then we do it to other people. It's a vicious cycle where the victim becomes the perpetrator. Right? It's a, mm-hmm. It's a big cultural problem. Right?
Are you still affiliated with Kappa Alpha Psi?
So the fraternity kicked me out.
Mm-hmm.
They kicked me out back in 2006. So I'm not affiliated with the fraternity. I'm not a dues paying member or any of that stuff. But you know, at the end of the day, that doesn't, to me personally, that doesn't matter. But what matters is, in the eyes of other young students, you have an experience that I'm thinking about doing.
Mm-hmm.
And they need to hear my perspective, my having been there and having seen the having been on a side where you think everything's great and perfect and you think that this is the right thing to do. And then, you know, you live through the harsh realities of it, of not just hazing, but just of being Greek in general, because I tell you, it's not a utopia, right? It's like all groups, right? There's some bad apples, there's some good apples, there's some days you're like, okay, this is ridiculous. And I think they just need to hear that. We don't hear that enough. So, I'm definitely not in the fraternity, but that does not absolve me of the, I think, responsibility to share my message.